T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
You got Matt Miller on all the time.
Matt Miller.
Here I come. You ready?
Lead NFL and NFL draft analyst at Bleacher Report.
The NFL, you need guys who have upside and potential, and you have to have something that kind of makes you special.
The Stick to Football Podcast.
We ain't got
to
talk about too much. We're just having fun and we're working, baby. That's it.
Going through college and NFL film.
You need to be just an MF-er out there where you're going to put this guy on the ground every play.
Matt Miller with Bernstein and McKnight on The Score.
Matt Miller's on Twitter at NFL Draft Scout. He joins us now at the top of the hour. That's brought to you by the Chicago Wolves. The Chicago Wolves return home this week to face division rivals Grand Rapids, Rockford, and Milwaukee. Wednesday's Craft Beer Arena Crawl Night. Saturday's Esports Night. Visit ChicagoWolves.com and join in on the quest to be the last team standing. All right, before we get to the action this weekend, Matt Miller, the Bears made a decision on their defensive coordinator. Vic Fangio's replacement is going to be the similarly empowered Chuck Pagano. Good hire, bad hire, something in between?
A good hire, I think. You know, I think too often people remember Chuck Pagano for what he was in Indianapolis. And unfortunately, you know, he gets there, has cancer, has to take a year away. Bruce Arians comes in and honestly outcoaches him, does a better job. And then, you know, from there was kind of plagued by, you know, some problems on the roster, some very bad drafting by Ryan Grigson. Andrew Luck gets hurt. So not to just come on your radio show and make excuses for Ryan Grigson, for Chuck Pagano, but I don't know that he was ever dealt the best hand there in terms of personnel. And I think one thing that we know about Chicago is pretty good personnel, especially on the defensive side of things. So for him to come in, runs a very versatile defense from, you know, going back to his days where, you know, he was with the Ravens as a secondary coach and the defensive coordinator. Like, this guy knows how to match up pressures. He knows how to be, you know, versatile in his scheme. It's not just, all right, we're going to run a 3-4. Here we go. We're going to stop anything that the offense throws at us. I think he's smart enough to adapt his scheme to the players that he has in the field. And, you know, you can look at what he's done with guys like Terrell Suggs. You can look at what he did with, obviously, you know, the big one there is, you know, what they have with from Ray Lewis to C.J. Mosley, a middle linebacker in Baltimore, like a pretty good track record. So I think he matches up well with what the Bears have in terms of talent.
What does it say, Matt, about Matt Nagy that he wants to redux the situation he had with Vic Fangio last year? Chuck Pagano, it seems, is going to have the defense. That's his. And the only thing you're going to have to worry about from Matt is when he knocks on the door and asks for 95 or asks for 52 or 58 on offense for a play here and there.
No, that's smart. And I know, you know, this is kind of the thing that's trendy right now in the NFL. It's almost, you know, co-head coaches where you got one guy who runs the offense, one guy that runs the defense. I happen to think it's really smart. And you know, in this hiring cycle, with whether it's Matt LaFleur or Cliff Kingsbury, we've talked a lot about, okay, well, you have to match yourself up with a guy who can run the defense. And you can thank Sean McVay for this, because the first thing he did when he got hired was to go get Wade Phillips. And that's obviously worked pretty well. So I think it says a lot about the fact that, you know, Nagy's a confident guy. He's not worried about, you know, butting heads with a strong defensive coordinator. He wants the best coaching staff possible. And Pagano, I thought he was the best of the available candidates for D.C. once Fangio was going to leave. If you're going to go outside the building, you know, I like him better than Steve Wilks. I like him a lot better than Greg Williams. So I think it's a smart hire where you do trust this guy who has head coaching experience to run his side of the ball, and you feel like you can coexist and not have a Hugh Jackson versus Greg Williams type environment here.
We were trying to divine some meaning from what you say is now sort of accepted practice in having these co-head coaches and also general managers who are more involved perhaps in some of the decision-making. Why has it gone in that direction when previously it had always been the autocratic Bill Parcells of, I'm going to be cooking the meal, I'm the guy right, getting the groceries, and now it isn't that anymore, and it seems, for lack of a better term, people are nicer about it. Why is that considered best practices in football business?
Well, I do. I mean, just like everything in the NFL right now, if Sean McVay does it, it's got to be good, right? And I think, you know, honestly, like, I do believe that Bill Belichick started this when he brought Josh McDaniels back after the failure in Denver as head coach. He brought him back and said, you know what? I trust you to run the offense. Free me up. to do the bigger game plan, free me up to scout, free me up to run the defense. And it's worked really well there. So I think that there's also now, because coaches are younger than ever before, you know, it's, you don't wait until you're 50 or 60 to get your first job unless you're Vic Fangio. You know, a lot of these head coaches are in their 30s and they are very green. So I think that's one thing where they can go into an owner or to a general manager and say, you know what, I don't know the first thing about defense, but this guy does, and I'm going to hire him. And it's just, it makes, if you're the guy signing these checks as the owner, it makes you feel a lot better that, all right, we're not just, this isn't one dude's ego running a team. It's a collection of very good, smart coaches that can then work together. And, you know, I think that's the ideal way to build a coaching staff, a scouting staff, a team, is let's get the best people we can that can work together and figure this out collectively.
You mentioned Belichick. Wonder if you think his Patriots have gotten right to where they always seem to get to at this point in the year, clicking on all cylinders, or and as dangerous as ever.
They are, man. And I, you know, guys, I live in Chiefs country, and I'm sitting there watching the game yesterday, and I texted a bunch of my buddies and was like, if the Patriots look like this, Kansas City can't stop them. I think they ran 20 screens out of the first 27 plays. Who has an answer for that? You know, and the Chargers are very banged up at linebacker, so they don't have guys to combat that. And it's just, again, it's very smart game planning by Bill Belichick. I know people are tired of hearing that, but if defenses are going to come out with 6 and 7 DBs and not get out of that personnel, well, guess what? We're going to run screen game, and off those same looks, you're going to run with Sony Michel, who went off yesterday in a big game. So I think it's just, they are so good in New England about just finding your weakness and exploiting it. And playing Kansas City, who is very weak in the secondary, I mean, this isn't a secret. Everyone knows they've struggled in the secondary. I'm going to be interested to see what type of matchups that they get. You know, Gronk looks like an offensive tackle, but he can still go off for 10 catches and 3 touchdowns because he is able to just find those mismatches.
What does it mean to you that the 4 teams remaining aren't just your top seeds, but it's the highest scoring teams in the regular season?
I think that says like everyone always wants the underdog, right? And people get mad at us, all us talking heads, when we pick the best teams to make the Super Bowl, and they're like, oh, well, that's boring. Like, no, it's smart. Like, these are the teams that are, they are here for a reason. So that doesn't surprise me. I know that this year, there was all the talk about, you know, everyone scoring 40, 50 points a game, but you need that, but you also have to be well-rounded. And I think that the games in the playoffs have showed that. You know, Kansas City scored a ton of points against the Colts, but they also shut Andrew Luck down, and they were able to get a lead and then just tee off on him because the Colts had to throw to get back into it. And, you know, the Saints yesterday showing great defensive play to slow down the Eagles and to take back a lead by Marshawn Lattimore having 2 interceptions and making some big plays. Everyone in the middle of the field. So I think, you know, we get down to that. The playoffs are different. Like, there's more pressure. The coaches are better. The players are better. And you can't be one-dimensional and expect to win these games.
We're going to hear from Ryan Pace and Matt Nagy in about, I don't know, 22 minutes, something like that. I wonder, you know, Dan and I spent some of the morning grousing about the running back situation the Bears are in because of what we saw in the divisional round. And I guess it's probably because we're both still a little salty about things. But if Matt Nagy had his pick, would he rather start moving, you know, draft picks are what they are for the Bears, but would he rather start moving toward back by committee, or would he rather move toward featured back? I don't know. Are the two things equal in your mind, even when you look at a game like Dallas and the Rams played, or like the Saints and the Eagles played versus some committee stuff that you've seen the Patriots do over years?
Yeah, I think that I think everyone would prefer to have a featured back, right? At least on a rookie deal. Like, that's what you want. You want Ezekiel Elliott within the first 5 years, you know, and I think you can look at what Nagy had in Kansas City with Kareem Hunt. I mean, they loved that guy. They fed him the ball, you know, 25 times a game in total touches anytime he was on the field. So I think you would love to find a guy who can do a little bit of everything and just be your bell cow. But that is getting harder to do. And even you still need depth. You know, obviously Todd Gurley's banged up. So CJ Anderson comes in looking like Mike Tolbert and gashes that defense. So I think it's like kind of a best of both worlds. You know, even with Zeke Elliott, you got Rod Smith down there, who's a very good backup. So you really need a little bit of everything. And obviously Tariq Cohen is that little bit of everything. So I wouldn't be surprised if they did try to get more of a, you know, a true feature backup between the tackles guy. I still hold out hope because there are like times you see flashes from Jordan Howard where it's like, just do that. Just keep doing that. And it's just, I think right now it's more about consistency. This draft class coming up is pretty deep at running back. Like, there's Josh Jacobs from Alabama is my guy. Like, I would draft him in the first round. He reminds me of Alvin Kamara with a little more physicality. But, you know, after that, like, there's good depth, whether it's like a Darrell Henderson from Memphis, who, you know, is a good receiver out of the backfield. You could find power guys to come in and pair up with Tariq Cohen if that's the direction they want to go with, like a David Montgomery from Iowa State or Damian Harris from Alabama. Like, you could kind of piece together a pretty good running back by committee group if they are willing to invest. You know, obviously they don't have a first-round pick, but willing to invest a second or third in this draft on the position.
I'm curious, when you make a move to a new defensive coordinator, and we talked to Jarrell Freeman earlier in the show about what the differences are, and when you start to say, yeah, nine of those guys are coming back, you're looking at overall roster construction for a way that Chuck Pagano, where he's going to want some of this depth, and he blitzes more, he pressures more.
Yeah.
How is that going to change? When you start looking at some of these value picks in the draft, when you start looking for of what a guy like Joel Iyabiniwe might mean going forward, what is the changing the philosophy? And look, there's going to be new positional coaches too, but what is the they're saying is less than a defensive overhaul, but as long as you're talking draft a little bit, how is this going to affect the roster having these new sets of eyes on all these different roles, including special teams?
Yeah, I would think the secondary is probably where the changes would be felt most. I mean, not like Eddie Jackson's not going anywhere, right? Like, he's pretty good at his job. He's going to be fine back there. Like you said, there's going to be more pressure, which means more man coverage. You know, so I think you look at what are you going to do opposite Kyle Fuller. And Prince Mukamara has been okay, right? He's solid, but they have to eventually get younger and better at that position. So I think that's where, like, if I were going to do a 2-round mock draft, you know, I'm looking for the Bears. Like, is a guy like Julian Love from Notre Dame going to be available? Someone who is a little bit bigger, maybe doesn't have great speed, but can be physical out on the edge and can, you know, match up if you're blitzing a ton and bringing outside pressure, then you need guys who can not only jam, but then can turn and run a little bit. So that's where I would kind of start to look at this, is like, okay, what corners are going to be available for me in round two, late in round two especially, that could come in and be impact players? You know, the middle linebacker position, obviously Roquan's there and is going to lock it down, but I think you have to always keep an eye there of, we need to get faster, more athletic guys who are versatile, can blitz. I saw Daniel Jeremiah tweet that this morning, actually, of like, the NFL now, like, you better have an inside backer that can stop the run, cover tight ends, and blitz.
Mm-hmm.
And he's right. Those guys are just really hard to find. So I think that's where you have to be, you know, you have to have good scouts who can maybe find a guy like Gary Johnson from Texas in the third round, where, okay, you know, he's a little rough around the edges. There's some things we need cleaned up. But just athletically, he fits all of those boxes that you want to find for an inside linebacker, especially if you're going to be running more base 3-4, where you're going to want two guys out there who can cover, or, you know, even when you do go to your big nickel, you still need two backers who can cover. So finding someone to match up with Roquan as a not even just a coverage linebacker, just as this new wave of linebacker would be pretty important to me.
Matt, I was listening to the station a lot over the weekend, and on my way in this morning, I heard the theme continued. Bears fans are wondering about a replacement for Cody Parkey and seriously asking whether or not a draft pick should be used on a kicker. So I just wanted to clear the air with you, since you know what the hell you're talking about. Kickers should either A, never be drafted, B, never be drafted except the 7th round, or C, not be part of the NFL.
I would say never be drafted except for the 7th round.
Okay.
And like, normally I'm like, God, a kicker got drafted. Like, are you serious? But kicking in the NFL is really bad right now. And I will, full disclosure, I have not started scouting kickers yet. So
no,
why
would you? Don't
do
that.
I can't rattle off names. But we'll get there eventually.
I'm looking at the weather forecast for Kansas City. It's supposed to snow on Saturday and then be absolutely frigid on Sunday with a high of 15 degrees.
Oh,
yeah, I'm in KC right now, and there's probably a foot of snow on the ground. It's freezing cold. Thankfully, I'm on my way to L.A., so I'm going to get out of this mess. But the good thing is the Patriots now to play in cold weather, so I don't know how much that's going to affect it. But it is. It was nice to see Patrick Mahomes play his first game in snow and still look like Superman out there.
With Kyler Murray set to declare for the NFL draft at some point today, that's his deadline. It's not the Oakland Athletics deadline. Is this a news day for you, or not really, since we know that the only way his best way to exert more leverage over his baseball situation is just by declaring for the draft?
You know, I only think it's news today if he doesn't declare.
Okay.
Because, like you said, he's not a normal player. And I don't know how much time we have left to dive into this, but a normal player declares for the draft. Today's the deadline. You then have 3 days to change your mind. Even if you've signed with an agent, whatever, you can change your mind, null and void, go back to school. With Kyler Murray, he's not going back to school either way, based on all the information that we all have.
Yeah.
So he basically has until the NFL scouting combine at the end of February to make a decision. So the smart money is he declares today and he buys himself about 5-6 weeks to make a decision. He has a month until spring training starts for the A's, so that's really the next event on the calendar where he has to make a decision of which way am I going to go with this. So it is a unique situation. I only personally think like that it is big news if he comes out and says, you know what, I'm going to take the $15 million from the A's and I'm going to go play baseball. Then obviously, you know, everything changes and we just say, okay, well, we're done with this guy because you're not going to draft him. You only own draft rights for 1 year. So it wouldn't make sense for a team, you know, to like the Patriots or whomever to draft him in the seventh round and hope he changes his mind because you only own those rights until the next draft when he would be eligible to re-enter.
No, I'm just celebrating the fact that somebody with leverage is doing everything he can possibly do to maximize it in the moment. I think it's a great story.
I do too. And I said this on our podcast the other day that, you know, like we get so caught up in business decisions and money and, you know, like has anyone just asked the kid, hey, which sport do you like playing more? You know, like he's a fantastic player. He's a top 10 pick in both sports, most likely, which is unprecedented. You know, and I'm so happy for him that he does. Like you said, he has leverage to just go out there and say, you know what, I would probably be a top 10 pick in football. That's what this contract looks like. I love baseball. Why don't you guys match it? So good for him. But, you know, at the end of the day, like I hope he just picks the sport that he loves and is able to go out and excel at it instead of it's like everything these days. It seems like the groups are being pitted against each other and everyone forgets to ask the 20-year-old superstar athlete, what do you want to do, man?
It's the appropriate time, too, to bring up the injury to Bryce Love, who disclosed that the final game of the regular season, he tore his ACL. How does that affect the draft prospects of the one-time Heisman finalist?
Man, I don't know of any player who hurt their draft stock more this year, not only just with the injury, but when he was on the field, he did not look good. I thought he would have been a late second, early third-round pick last year. And so, like, you start the year, and that's about where you think he'll go, right? Because the ACL injury and the timing that it happened, you know, that would be, what, late December, early January, you're at a rush to get back by September. More likely than not, you might have to sit out your rookie season. So I would look at him now and say, gosh, this is probably a late day three pick, like maybe round five, anywhere down to round seven, because like you have to remember, this is a very small player who only caught 3 passes last year at Stanford as a junior. So he's a small back who never had great speed. Now he has an ACL injury, and he hasn't proven that he can be an asset as a third down back. So it's tragic that, like you said, he was a Heisman finalist in 2017. It just, that might be the peak of his career, unfortunately.
Matt, thank you, sir. We'll talk again next week.
Appreciate it, guys. Have a great one.
That is Matt Miller at NFL Draft Scout on Twitter. He of Bleacher Report.
Kickers should only be drafted in the seventh round, and even then, meh.
Probably not.
Just keep that in your brain. Just hold on to that.
The segment brought to you by Subway. Satisfy your steak-a-tite with Subway Restaurant's $3.99 6-inch steak and cheese. Hurry in this month only. January only at participating restaurants. Additional charge for extras plus applicable tax. No additional discounts or coupons may be applied. Bottom of the hour, Bears press conference live. Ryan Pace, Matt Nagy. You'll hear them here on The Score.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
We're fired up about this.
And you should be, my good man.
You're fired up.
A lot about which to be fired up. The bottom of the hour brought to you by the Chicago Wolves. The Chicago Wolves return home this week to face division rivals Grand Rapids, Rockford, and Milwaukee. Wednesday is a craft beer arena crawl night, and Saturday is esports night. Visit ChicagoWolves.com and join on the quest to be the last team standing.
Couple of questions hopefully answered here in the next, well, starting in the next couple of minutes. We will carry the entirety of the Matt Nagy, Ryan Pace press conference here on The Score. It's set to begin in just a few, so you're not missing anything. We'll bring you to it as soon as it starts. I know fans want to know. I know reporters want to know. You and I want to know everything that they can let us know about Trey Burton's situation, everything that they can let us know about Cody Parkey's situation. And while those are, I mean, they're more than curiosities to me. It's more than just needing to know the answers to those things, because that's, you know, that's the stuff that scratches at my brain over the last 10 days or so. But there's real football questions that may or may not be asked today, depending on, you know, what kind of digressions we take and what kind of you know, lines of questionings people want to go through. But don't you still kind of want to know about the actual scheme that got applied to the Eagles in the wild card round? Don't you still kind of want to know about how aggressive or not aggressive Matt Nagy chose to be or didn't choose to be in the first half?
This is stuff we're not going to
fourth quarter.
Yeah, we're not going to find this out about why it didn't appear that Mitchell Trubisky found his sea legs until halfway through the third. But the answer could be that he'll never tell you we were featuring Trey Burton, and for whatever reason, he wasn't there.
There's that. There's the Trey Burton scheme stuff, but there was an injury to Mitch too. I mean, he came up hobbling when he went out of bounds. So at some point, you know, if your answer is, well, Mitch got hobbled a little and we changed the game plan some or whatever.
Some more straight dropbacks, some less moving pocket.
I want to hear all of that stuff, because Matt Nagy had a lot of conversation about his postseason play calling coming to Chicago. And while some of that's been rectified and gone back through, I'm like, okay, maybe it wasn't the kind of game that the national media espoused it to be when he arrived in Chicago. It was still a line. It was still a worry. Not worry so much as it was part of Matt Nagy's coaching history. And now you've got another playoff game. He's only got two. You know, the resume is only two so far. So in order to find out what you want to know about Matt Nagy going into next season, I think questions about that would be good to hear the answers to.
Top of mind right now, are they going to commit to Cody Parkey being brought back for next year or not? I got to pin him down on that. Is he going to be competing for his job at the very least in training camp? I mean, we'll see how they leave that. We'll know from the answer probably if they plan on cutting Parkey or not. My bet would be that he's not the Bears kicker next year, that he's not a Bears kicker next year. We need to find out how they ended up at Chuck Pagano,
mm-hmm.
where the Todd Bowles conversation was, how that all got there, and probably their level of ongoing trust after what Nagy himself called a strange injury situation regarding Trey Burton. What is the trust about his availability, et cetera?
And I would bet we go through at some point conversation about individual pending free agents. You know, you don't have many. But you do have Bryce Callahan and you do have Adrian Amos. You know, those guys mattered at different times during the season. Callahan was playing really well up until getting hurt, and Sherrick McManus did well filling in. But I think specifically defensively, you've got some questions about how you want to fill those holes and what kind of aggression you want to use with your cap space that you have left. I mean, are you going to be active in doing that? Does Cody Parkey's money hinder you in finding other free agents? Because as that decision comes down, whether you're going to have him compete for something or not have a job or whatever, his money is going to matter because they guaranteed it.
I haven't looked at the NFL calendar for when some of these moves have to be made and what the drop-down dates are here. But for guys like Deion Sims, for guys like Kyle Long, there are some people who have some numbers that are glaring right now that could definitely free up some opportunism. But bottom line is that the team's here. The material players are here. The guys that matter are here, and that's sort of the commitment we knew they were making.
Yeah, I think, you know, for me, offensively, the goal has to be another 6-7 points a week. I mean, it can't be just 17. It's got to be more than that.
We started the show by saying you just said 24.
Yeah, I've been on that number for a little while.
And I just said that I'm certain, regardless of whatever defensive regression occurs, and there will be some, statistically, there just will be, that there were some outlier performances this year on their defense individually that added up to what might be an outlier collectively, that even if they're a good but not great defense,
mm-hmm.
if they average 24 points a game, that's 10 wins.
Feels right.
If you can give me that, I will be very confident saying this is a 10-win team, regardless of their schedule, everything else, if they average 24.
And that's just kind of doing math on the back of the envelope. I mean, really, that's just math in your
head.
I'm
not doing any math. I'm just talking. But Scott from Davenport did do the math.
No kidding.
And he graphed it. And he did send us, and actually that is right where it intersects as far as balancing out for averaging the defense, saying if you're just looking at points per game in that regard as an indicator, 24 gets you right about at 10.
Huh.
Did you see Biggs' column yesterday about how rare it is for teams that go last to first to bounce back?
In the last, to go from first to first?
Right. 23 instances in the last 16 years, 4 repeated as division winners, only 6 made the playoffs.
Wow. Did he say why?
No, he didn't. I don't. He didn't go through every individual instance, but put it was a big graphic on the in the Tribune in the middle of the sports section, and it said it just gave each team.
Well, that's,
but it's really interesting that, you know, and obviously each situation is different. Maybe some were built more for 1 year runs. However, that was pretty stark to look at that and see, and some of them that, two of them that went 1-1 were in crap divisions and their record got a lot. Like one of them was the Panthers that went to like 7-8-1 that won a division, or Seattle that did that.
Yeah, 7-9 Seattle.
Yeah, so there were only, I don't believe any or maybe one of the four actually improved their record, but most of them either stayed the same, got worse, and it's kind of sobering to look at that.
Somebody might jump to strength of schedule and say that the way the NFL sets it up is your reward for being first is a schedule that says you were first.
And I'm sure all of them had really good injury luck, too.
Right.
And that's the thing, too, is the Bears have depth some places on this roster, but there are some other places that, assuming we're excluding, like, Trubisky going down for the year early or something.
Sure.
Which would be a worst-case scenario, that you would still be pretty screwed.
But even if, you're right to point that out, if Tariq Cohen had gone down at any point during the season, the Bears' running back depth was not there. The Chiefs had running back depth in so much as they went from Kareem Hunt to Spencer Ware. Spencer Ware went down in a week and a half, and Damien Williams steps up and plays the way he did over the last couple of weeks, and in a pretty decent playoff game. Like that's depth. Some of that's scheme, to be sure, but I think, you know, it kind of proves your offensive line issues or maybe your scheme issues so far in your first year with Matt Nagy, that you didn't get much out of that next running back around. You didn't. It wasn't there. That wasn't findable, those yards.
They were force-feeding us Taequann Mizell even with everybody healthy.
Benny Cunningham got two or three important third-down carries. He got the one before the field goal against the Dolphins. He got one against the Eagles, and I think he got one against the Vikings as well.
Yeah, I said it earlier in the show that one of my conclusions from watching some of these playoff teams and watching what they do this time of year and how they do it, that you can like Jordan Howard all you want, and I'm going to run into this, and I'm prepared to run into this. I'd be more than happy if they moved on from Jordan Howard in one way or another, because I think, like I saw from C.J. Anderson, you can be a big fat running back if you can run.
Oh, and he was.
Yes, but he could run. Was it Mike Tolbert, the comparison we got from Matt Miller?
From Coastal Carolina?
Yeah. Yeah.
Chanticleer?
Yeah, he didn't give us Natron Means. He didn't give us any of the other Ironhead Hayward or any of the other guys that would fit that description.
Do you know what Jordan Howard's money is next season?
What?
It's a low, low price of $800,000.
It's hard to pass up a contribution from a guy at that number.
$800,000.
You just got to slim him down and speed him up and get him to be able to run through an arm tackle.
Okay, but save that.
Or he's your goal line back.
There you go. It's finding whatever skill sets you can to maximize. It's, you know, you don't, at some point, you got to stop trying to reshape the wheel.
Don't you want your goal line back to be able to catch the ball, though? Is that a really important part of it?
Texter brought this up earlier.
No, I would prefer, if I had to choose between being able to catch the ball and being able to be big and run through the line, I would choose that.
He just hasn't been that good at it, though, about running through people, even at his size. I think
Texter brought this up, that a threat in the passing game is different than being able to receive the ball, which I thought Jordan Howard was. He was able to receive the ball this year, but he's right, the Texter is. And that he wasn't really a threat. He's not somebody you have to account for. You can trust whatever your weak side linebacker is to cover the flat and run with and make a tackle at 5 yards out, because you're not all that worried about Jordan Howard getting loose, escaping anybody, and slipping a tackle. You just weren't. But to that end, I think Matt Nagy would like his running back to be able to receive the ball some in goal line. You've seen the way he calls plays. Can you be just a barrel it over the line kind of fat guy? Yup. But I think Matt Nagy's looking for more versatility, and that's why everybody's pegged running back as a position they're going to search depth for.
Yeah, I think they were crying for help in the way they were playing Taquan Mizell and Benny Cunningham at times. Because that's what that is. They're telling you, we need more weapons here.
Benny Cunningham's going to be a free agent. He was paid $1 million this last year. He was the highest paid running back on the Bears. Tariq Cohen at $700,000. Wow. Jordan Howard at, I'm talking about this past year's numbers. Jordan Howard at $700,000. Tariq at $715,000. And Taquan Mizell at a $300,000 number. Three of those are coming back. Benny Cunningham's a free agent. You got some money there. You'd like to put some money there, I guess. Or just use some of the little bit of draft capital you have left and find a running back there.
Matt told us it was deep, so. Yeah, the 815 says they need a James White type. Well, a lot of teams would love a James White.
A lot of teams would like
type.
A Jimmy. Yeah. Everybody, you got
to
have that.
Jimmy in your
He's
world,
Jimmy White to me. It's what he is.
Just somebody that can crease a defense. You see what speed does. You just flat out speed from that position.
The screen game. Matt Miller made a great point, too. 20 of the first 27, I think he said, pass plays for the Patriots were screens. I mean, that's, first of all, it's insane. Not as insane as Tom Brady thinking his brain is unbreakable, but that's a game I think I kind of expected to see some more of that with Tariq Cohen. Not the, you know, the running back screen type stuff where offensive linemen are letting you get through and then you're making that dump off pass. He had the one for 70 or something like that. It was called against a perfect defense. What was that, against the Buccaneers, I think? His big long screen reception for a touchdown. I think that's
they caught him in a blitz.
I think that's the longest touchdown of the year for the Bears, too. Otherwise, it was wide receiver stuff. It was going out wide. It was, you know, you saw Tariq in a couple of instances with, you know, in trip sets off to one side or even, you know, bunch four, and he's catching something or trying to catch something behind those blockers, behind those wide receivers set up to block and headed downfield that way.
Why would the Bears be late for a planned press conference?
Couldn't tell you.
You know, this...
Well, it's not like they've been great about being on time for noon on Mondays anyway.
No, we were spoiled by how Mark Trestman would be like 45 minutes late or John Fox would be, he'd be 5 minutes late and come out and say nothing and leave. But for something like this, when you already, and I was listening to Mulligan this morning, he said the Bears are technically in violation of league protocol.
They are. You're supposed to have this press conference 3 days, 4 days, I think.
I think they said within a week because they were talking about it on Thursday and Friday, too, once it became evident that it wasn't going to happen last week.
And they were waiting for the news cycle to roll on, perhaps. And I don't know what their rationale was, that it was just maybe raw emotion for the way the season ended.
Or wanting to have a defensive coordinator in place.
Do you think that they're having to find Chuck Pagano some pants? Because the Broncos had to find pants for Vic Fangio before their introductory fresco. Did you read this?
Whoa.
In the Denver Post, Mike wrote this. The sporty khaki pants that Fangio wore, they were Broncos issued. How do we know? Coach borrowed the slacks from Denver's locker room. He might be Italian, but Fangio is definitely not related to Giorgio Armani. Finding the proper waist size wasn't hard for Fangio. The inseam, however, this is before their introductory press conference of a new head coach. He didn't have pants to wear.
Wait.
The inseam ran way too long, so long that the pants swallowed his shoes. To avoid tripping on the way to being introduced as the 17th coach in Broncos history, it required emergency tailoring, which entailed rolling up Fangio's pant legs and temporarily hemming the extra material with safety pins. That was apparently done by a Broncos PR person.
We will send you now live to Halas Hall, where Ryan Pace and Matt Nagy are meeting the media, presented by your local and Northwest Indiana Hyundai dealers.
Good week last week, so I appreciate you guys being here today. Feels better to walk in this year than in years past. But honestly, it's, you know, an abrupt end of the season. It's painful. It's painful because we set our goals high. We're proud of what we accomplished. We're not satisfied. If anything, I feel like it drives us more as we go forward. And, you know, last season I look back, it was about momentum. And really, momentum that started when we hired Matt. And I felt like that just continued. 12-4, winning the division, making the playoffs, those are all things that we're proud of. But it's on us to ensure that we're on the right track and that we stay on the right track. I want to thank our players, our coaches, and our staff, and definitely our fans. Last season we had a lot of highs. But there's definitely more to come as we go forward, and we're excited about that. So with that, we'll be happy to take any questions.
Ryan, what attracted you to Chuck Pagano?
Really, the coach, those are Matt's hires, so he's better to speak on that.
Yeah, no, it was a you get into a situation there like we did as everything happened at the end of the season, as every team, and teams are dealing with it today after, you know, abrupt losses last night. And there's just a lot of things that go on with your players, your coaches. And so Vic ended up getting a great opportunity. He did that. And the next part was now, okay, now we got to figure out what's next. And so that's exactly what we did. I think with Chuck, from the times that we talked and just kind of seeing where he's at, number one, I always say this, it starts off with good people and good high character. So that's number one. Then you get to the second part, that's the X's and O's part. And everything that we talked about in the interview is really what I enjoy and what I think can be really good with this defense. He has an attacking style, mentality. He is aggressive. But yet, as we try to talk about all the time, being, you know, calculated too, you got to be smart with it. But he's been doing it for a long time. He's been in this league for a while. He's had a lot of success. He's been around some really, really good defenses, some really, really good players on defense. And, you know, the more we talked, the more that I felt like, you know what, this is a really good, perfect fit for us, and just really looking forward to and excited for it.
Matt, because the defense was so successful last year, how did you weigh going outside to fill that position versus maybe promoting someone from within?
Like, sure, yeah, those are all things that you look into. And, you know, we interviewed Ed Donatell. He did a great job. Ed's been just a guy that has done a lot of good things for us and just have a lot of respect for him. But we need to do whatever's best for this organization, the players, the coaches, and then you take it all together and you just weigh it out and you see how it fits. And so, you know, that was definitely something that we looked into, and that's a part of the process for us too. That was important.
Matt, is Ed going to be back?
We're working through that right now. There's a possibility, but he was out of contract, so he has a decision to make. But again, I a lot of times I'm going to start off with the people side on who these guys are and the coaches side. And so I have a ton of respect for him. It's very mutual between both of us, and we're working through that.
What's the future of Cody Parkey, and how surprised were you that he appeared on the Today Show last Friday?
Yeah, David, we know. That position is an emphasis for us. Like, I think, you know, we understand we need to get better there. We need more production out of that position. And, Matt talks about it all the time. There's so much parity in our league, so many close games. The kicker position is critical. So we know we need to get better there, and it'll be an area of focus.
Will you be a Bear?
Those are things that need to play out as we go into it.
You know, Matt was always.
He was going to appear on the Today Show. Did you talk to him before he did that?
No. So I have exit interviews with all 65 players on the team. It doesn't matter who you are. we get together and interview, and Cody was obviously did my interview with him, and we had a good interview. You know, it was not brought up at that time. I mean, there's so much stuff that goes on right after the game with just so many different things. So we, you know, that wasn't brought up at the time.
Ryan, whenever Matt had a chance to talk about Cody during the season, he was 100% supportive. He didn't bring people in during the rough times. Will there be competition this offseason at the bare minimum?
Oh, for sure. Yeah, I think, again, that's going to be an emphasis of focus for us, the kicker position, and there'll definitely be competition there. Yeah.
Matt, are there any other staff changes that you know of at this point that you can?
We're going through all that right now, and literally I haven't taken a breather since last weekend. It's been nonstop since starts off with the players, and then it happened with Vic's departure. Now it's the coaches. So as you guys can all imagine, I mean, it's phone calls from everybody from everywhere. But what we need to do is just, again, everybody work together, talk, use resources, and try to figure out. We don't need to rush into decisions. That's the beauty of where we're at right now. So make sure we do it the way we feel is best for the team and take our time with whatever we need to do. But we're working through all that.
Ryan, how certain are you that Trey Burton's injury for the Eagles game was not anxiety-related?
Marcus, we went through that. So, you know, Trey, he practiced Friday. I'm just reflecting back on that. And then Saturday, he woke up with the inflammation in the groin area. So all our MRIs, all our scans show that. So it's significant. So we talked through that every, you know, really every second. And for us, our doctors and what the test revealed, that was a real injury that he had to deal with. We were hopeful it would calm down by kickoff. Unfortunately, he didn't. Our expectations would be, if we were fortunate enough to win that game, he could have been ready the next week. But he wasn't ready that game.
But even as real as the injury was, could that have been triggered by some anxiety issues that he's had?
It's hard to tell, Mark, where it came from. We just know that, you know, that thing popped up Saturday morning and he was unable to play.
So you're not concerned about that being an issue, the anxiety part being an issue going forward?
No.
Going back to Cody, really.
Nick's familiarity, because of his continuity with the defense, you were able to give him a lot of freedom and ownership.
Yeah.
How do you see that unfolding with Chuck, and what is the value of his long track record experience?
So you have to take that into consideration. We had a lot of success last year as a defense and as a team. But as we talked about it to our guys when they left, is this is going to be a new year. And so it's important that the players trust in us as coaches and us as an organization, that we hire the right next people. And that's what we're in the middle of doing right now. And, so far between Chuck and myself, just talking through everything, you know, we have a solid plan on how we're going to go about doing it. And I think everybody can feel really comfortable with what we're going
to
do.
You want $1,000 in cash? Text FOOD to 72881 by the end of the hour. FOOD 72881. A randomly selected nationwide entrant this hour will win. Don't text and drive. Message and data rates may apply.
You know, building our relationship day by day, just like Vic and I did. And I'll have to, gain on the professional side of it, he'll have to gain trust, and I'll have to gain trust back and forth and with each other. But that's the beauty of it. And then you do that, and you start giving ideas, and you start feeling more comfortable in the environment together. It'll be nice, and I feel like it'll be a pretty seamless transition.
Matt, you mentioned that Cody didn't tell you about the Today Show in the exit interview. When did you find out about it, and what do you think of it?
Well, I found out, I don't even know the exact time that it was, but, you know, for me, and you understand that we always talk about, you know, a we and not a me thing. And we always talk as a team. We win as a team. We lose as a team. And, you know, I didn't necessarily think that was too much of a we thing.
I was going to say, did you think it was appropriate?
Again, I didn't think it was a we thing.
It was a year ago. You said you expressed your faith in the roster and the chance to build from three tough seasons. Where's your confidence now? What you guys can do ahead?
Yeah, it's good. Just meeting with the scouts about it. It's nice. I've said this before to you guys. It's nice to be able to walk into a depth chart and not see green magnets over the whole board. You know, we can kind of fine tune and tweak as we go forward. We got a lot of young guys. We got a lot of guys under contract, and we got a lot of guys hitting their peaks right now. So, but as we approach this offseason, we're still going to be aggressive. We're always going to be pushing it. And I think, you know, that's a challenge to our scouting department, to always be improving our roster, and that'll be the focus.
Ryan,
what update do you have? Khalil Mack's not playing Pro Bowl because of an injury. What update do you have on that?
Yeah, so he tweaked his knee in our final – it's a knee sprain in our final game. So it's nothing that we're overly concerned about, but it'll prevent him from playing in the Pro Bowl.
Surgery, any updates on off-season surgery for any of
you guys? Really, we're pretty fortunate in that area. Really, one player, Anthony Miller, will have a shoulder surgery, and that's really the only significant one.
Ryan, so much talk about Mitchell's growth over the season, but we haven't talked to you since training camp. So what are your thoughts on Mitchell's growth, maturity this season? What impressed you the most, and what do you want to see him –
Yeah, I think it was just good to see the natural growth just in the offensive scheme as he gained more comfort, and then also more comfort with the players that are around him, that chemistry that developed. And I was just talking to Mitch today about that, just the excitement about going into an offseason with the pieces in place around him, and then year two in the same offensive scheme and how much growth can take place. So I just felt like you saw him playing more with his instincts because he was more comfortable in the system.
Matt, we haven't had a chance to talk to you since the game. A lot of talk last week, specifically about Tariq Cohen only getting four touches on offense throughout the game. As you went back and looked at it after the game, was it just what the Eagles were doing to you guys, or what all went into that?
I think it was pretty much a little bit of a combination of that. And, you guys have seen it all year long. Sometimes there's games where he might get a lot more touches. I don't think it had anything to do with when he was out on the field. And sometimes when we have a play called, it's supposed to go to him, and it doesn't because they take him away. So it can be at times, when you only get so many targets or touches. There's times where me as a coach, I'm going to get challenged on those situations. It's not if you think that I don't want to get to Rico on the ball, then we need to reevaluate where we're at, because I don't think you know me too well. So could I go back and wish he had more touches? Absolutely, but I can't. And so now what I need to do is figure out if teams are going to try to take him away certain ways, and how do we get other guys the ball, and how do I get him the ball more when they try to take him away.
What did you think of the ebbs and flows of your offense?
It was probably what I thought would happen when you talked to me at the beginning of the season, that you would love it to be at the very bottom and then just continue to go one track the whole way. That didn't happen. There were some highs and there were some lows. You think about the Tampa Bay game and how great that was, and then you think of some of these other games where, whether it was a half or a quarter, where it just didn't look very good. But to me, what I'm most excited about is when we get to OTAs and we get to training camp, I can't even begin to explain how pumped up I am to take what we just put together this past year and fine-tune it to our players and our coaches and our scheme, and then just get it down to what we think gives us a better opportunity to be much better next year.
Alan kind of talked about that OTA period where you're not working on getting guys lined up anymore. They kind of have the football 101.
Right.
Is that where this kind of take off?
Yeah, so think about this. These guys, this was learning a new language when they got here April 3rd. They had no idea, no clue. So when we go line up out of practice, they're trying to figure out, what's my split? Is it -2 from the top of the numbers? Is it +2 from the bottom of the numbers? Am I in the alley split? Where am I? They all know that now. We're speaking the same lingo. So when we show up and those guys show up in for OTAs now they're on to, remember I kept saying 101, now we're on to 202. And I hope, at least it's my job and our coach's job, to make sure that that happens. And our guys are, from the exit interviews that we had, they're really excited to get back to that.
Ryan, when you look at the final four teams left, do you see any common thread that connects them that you apply to your own roster and you say, okay, we need to do this better?
That's a good question, David. I think when you look at that, you see balance, balance in both passing game and run game, You see continuity, that I think has existed there. Those are the things that stand out.
Top of the hour is brought to you by the Chicago Wolves. The Wolves return home this week to face division rivals Grand Rapids, Rockford, and Milwaukee. Wednesday's Craft Beer Arena Crawl Night. Saturday's Esports Night. Visit ChicagoWolves.com and join in the quest to be the last team standing.
That momentum, and how do you make sure that it stays on that track?
Yeah. I think first for Vic, just talking about him real quick, we couldn't be happier for him. I mean, talk about a guy who's done it the right way. He's just kept his head down and worked and earned this opportunity. And there's only 32 of them, so, Matt and I met with him a lot over those, last couple days. And you're just so happy and proud of Vic to be in that spot and wish him nothing but the best, because you know how we feel about him. But as we go forward, Matt, as we talk, you're – it's an old cliche, but you're never staying the same. You're getting better, you're getting worse. We need to make sure we're getting better. So a guy like Chuck, the more research we did, it was almost like with Matt. Everybody you talk to, it just starts bringing you into this person. And Chuck just checks a lot of boxes that are exciting to be a part of. Like Matt talked about the aggressive mentality. He's a great person. He's a great evaluator. He's had success where he's been in the past. He's great dealing with people. He's very collaborative. Those are all things that kept on coming up the more we met with him or talked about him. So that's exciting. I think it'll be good for our defense. We've got a lot of good players on that side of the ball, and we're just looking forward to continue to improve.
In that respect, how much will these guys be learning a new defense or learning a new language? How much actual adjustment phase will there be?
Yeah, I think that's something, Matt and Chuck talked about as they went through the process. And I think, there's obviously going to be some kind of a blend. We've done a lot of good things, but I'm sure Chuck's going to bring a lot of good things to add to the table as well.
Yeah, we're in a position here where they both have the 3-4 scheme family. And we've talked about it before, where when you see all these 11 personnel offenses that teams are playing, you're in more sub defense, four down. And so you're talking about a minimal part of the game when you talk as far as 3-4 versus sub. But then you have the language part of it and where they're at. And, again, there's some familiarity there. You got to remember Vic and Chuck worked together in Baltimore.
So whether it's preseason or training camp or whatever, early season, might there be some kind of step back relative to this year before you take a step forward?
Well, we just have to see. That'll be really neat to see how that goes, and we'll have to monitor that throughout the OTAs and getting into training camp. But anytime you have a change like this, it's not like going into year five of the same defense. There's that's expected, but it's how fast can you get it back up? Now, it's also Chuck is. He understands what he's coming into here player-wise. And we all as coaches understand, too, that when you're surrounded by good players, a lot of times it's the players and not the plays. And so Chuck has tons of experience. He gets that, and he'll do everything he can to make sure that we keep this thing rolling.
You're listening to 670 The Score, a radio.com station, WSCR and HD Chicago, WBMX HD2 Chicago.
For him, he conquered the next play mentality. He conquered that. He conquered the steps of 101 progressions. By the end of the year, he was reading progressions 1-2-3 run, right? That he conquered. Now I think level two next year is going to be him really recognizing pre-snap what he's about to see from these defenses. So last year he was so focused in on what do we do on offense? Hell, I've never run this offense before. What does that mean? Now he knows. He knows it all. And now he can take that next step of figuring out, okay, here they come. They got a Saul blitz, cover zero. Now I know what to do. I know what to check to, or I know where to put, protection, all that. That's going to be the big one for him.
Do you guys have as much faith in Jordan Howard going forward this year as you seem to have from the start of training camp this year?
Yeah. For me, just dealing with all of our players on our team, that's for me what I think has been the most unique part to this first year together on all sides, offense and defense, getting to see who these players are. And so, everyone talks about the run game. It wasn't as good as it should be. And the offense can be better without a doubt, no doubt. So I'm really excited. I'm not there yet, but I'm excited to get with the coaches here in the next couple weeks and start really evaluating these guys and seeing the why part. When you're going game by game, week by week, you think and you're watching it, but then you're on to that next opponent so quick that you're not the scheme eval part hasn't occurred. When we start diving into the scheme eval and we really truly know the why part, then that's where we're going to have more answers with the whole offense.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.